Following the defeat of the Liberal Party in Wentworth, although I should emphasise the Liberals haven't yet conceded the defeat or the seat to the independent Karen Phelps, the party has identified 10 more seats that they could lose at the next election. They're mainly traditional Liberal seats where the voters are economically right-wing but progressive on issues like climate change and refugees. So could a new political scene be taking shape on the centre-right? Are we going to have more Karen Phelps-style independents? Or is there space, not necessarily a need, but is there space for a new political party? Someone who is eminently qualified to discuss that is Christine Wallace. Chris is a former Canberra Press Gallery journalist. She's the author of many political biographies, and she's now at the National Centre of Biography at the ANU. Chris, welcome.
Good morning.
Chris, that's a pretty staggering number of seats the Liberal Party could potentially lose. I noticed the Fin Review did its own analysis and found this widening divide between Liberal supporters in the wealthier suburbs compared with those in the marginals. Are small L Liberal voters, the sort of upper middle class, looking for a new place to park their votes?
Well, it is a large number of seats, and you're right, it is very significant. I think moderate Liberal voters of the kind you've just described are definitely frustrated with the contemporary Liberal Party, which does not seem to reflect any of their views and concerns. So put yourself in one of those voters' shoes. You know, you're educated, you probably have quite a high income. Yes, you support very neoclassical economic kind of policy prescriptions, but you're also urgently worried about climate change. You're progressive on things like gay marriage. There's plenty of those kind of Liberal voters out there who year in, year out have been hanging in, were quite happy to hang in under the Howard government. But now it's really become a bit too much. You've got really now in the Liberal Party room the consequence of a few decades of moderates being driven out of the Liberal Party room. Mm. If you think back to the 80s, you had a lot of really good Liberal moderates in Canberra. You had, you know, people like Peter Bohm, Fred Chaney, Chris Puplik, Ian McPhee,
Steele Hall,
yeah. Who could articulate those kind of moderate Liberal voters' views and argue for them in cabinet, on the opposition front bench, in the party room. And really, you know, the Liberal Party is bearing the bad fruit of John Howard's drive from the 1980s onwards to really hunt out and destroy any moderate Liberal influence they could, as far as they could. Now, there's been a stubborn group of resistance, much to the chagrin of the John Howards and Tony Abbotts of the world, in the New South Wales moderates, where factional politics, you know, in New South Wales is just pretty ferocious, you know, at least as bad as factional politics in the Labor Party or worse. But really, if you try being a Liberal in Sydney on either side, it's not a lot of fun. The politics has become very fierce.
But Chris, isn't the problem for the so-called moderates that no one actually knows what they stand for? You went through a roll call of very eminent people in the late 80s and early 90s. And I remember at the very end of the 1980s, when I was a first-year politics student, I used to write these precocious letters to people like Ian McPhee and Peter Bohm, very warm, but they would send me back, Peter Bohm, who's a lovely man, would send me back a four-page letter, and it was about Liberal philosophy, and he gave me a reading list. But these people had a very clear and principled view of what they stood for, and they reached back not to Menzies but to Alfred Deakin. What do moderates stand for today?
Well, the trouble is there just aren't any moderates in Canberra, or hardly any, and those that are there really have no scope for speaking up. One of the problems, Michael, is when you go back through the history of the Liberal Party over the last few decades, that period from 96 onwards when John Howard became Prime Minister was incredibly important because there were a number of moderates still in the cabinet and in the ministry, but they rolled over to John Howard's policy positions, holus bolus, and any idea of being a moderate and fighting for moderate positions within cabinet just went out the door. So you had essentially a pack of moderates selling their smaller Liberal souls for personal political advancement and just going along with the John Howard agenda. So you had moderates in name only who just let the kind of fettered John Howard-style conservative policy agenda roll out. So, you know, it's not just a matter of having moderates in the party. I mean, that's the key threshold issue. But if you do have moderates in the party, when they get into positions of power, when they are offered the big jobs, are they going to sell out or are they going to actually fight for moderate values?
But I'm still unsure, though, of what they stand for, Chris, because I recall a couple of years ago being introduced to a leading moderate in the Federal Parliamentary Liberal Party, and he's a very affable fellow. I'll leave people to guess who he is. But I said, look, it seems to me the only thing that I can ascertain that you stand for is same-sex marriage, tax cuts for multimillionaires, and the Republic, to which he laughed and said, it sounds pretty good to me. But I thought, is that it? Is that the program?
Well, you know, things have worked down to a pretty low level here, I've got to say. Things, when they get this bad, tend to create some sort of reaction. And I've actually been very interested to notice a number of Liberals who are not, you know, they're taking that "I'm not going to take it anymore" attitude. And I think if more people took that attitude, if there was a concerted effort by moderates to recruit, to get moderates into branches, not to be let themselves be steamrolled by the kind of evangelical Christians organising a lot of the Liberal Party branches these days, kind of like trade unions, they're the ones you can count on to turn up to branch meetings and do the door knocking and so forth. You've got to, you know, if they want to change the party, if they want a party that's not going to get voted out in the next election, they've got to look more like mainstream of Australia. The Liberal Party's got to accept a broader range of views within and not hunt and kill anyone who doesn't have an extreme right view. There's a lot of work to be done. I know you have entertained the idea that a small party for moderate Liberals might be the answer that can build up and gather strength and have some sort of impact on politics. And you mentioned Steele Hall earlier. Of course, he tried to do that in South Australia when he split off from the Liberal Country League, which was an interesting operation at the time that combined at the state level Liberal and National Party voters in South Australia. It was too conservative for him, and he started the Liberal movement. And that was a very typical experience of how things pan out with small parties. There's great excitement. They build their base around a charismatic leader. They go to an election. They end up with no lower house seats. They might end up with a seat or two in the upper house. So they can influence things at the edges. But they can never form government and really change things.
Yeah, but
it's a bit doomed.
But Chris, you're quite right. But didn't the Liberal movement in South Australia beget ultimately the Australian Democrats? Now, they did die ultimately, but that was a very significant party holding the balance of power for about 15 years or, no, 20 years close to it in the Senate in Australia. So their attempts to break into the lower house failed, but that was a very significant centre party in the Senate.
That is true. And a lot of energy went into the Australian Democrats, and generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, they tended to be a force for somewhat on the progressive side of the conservative side of politics. Let's not forget their heartland was the Liberal Party, the kind of small progressive / small businessy type people. But, you know, those parties have existed before. Think back to the DLP. They had the balance of power in the Senate for a similar period and a big impact on Australian politics. But, Michael, the impact is on the edges. You know, you can soften or sharpen the policy package coming up from the governing party from the lower house to the Senate. But that's it. So would that kind of energy be better spent inside the main party, trying to normalise it, trying to drag it back from the extremes? I think in a two-party system like we have, the fight needs to be within the big parties to normalise them, to make them centrist, rather than let them drift off to the far outer reaches of each end.
It's Saturday Extra, Andrew West in for Geraldine, and I'm speaking with Chris Wallace. Chris is a distinguished Australian journalist and writer. She wrote a biography of John Hewson, who's an interesting character and who in some sense exemplifies what we're discussing now, which is whether there's a space for a small Liberal Party. Go back to Hewson, about whom you wrote. John Hewson is today the exemplar of the environmentally conscious, socially aware Liberal, but John Hewson was a pretty hardline right-wing economic rationalist when he joined the Parliament as a Liberal, I think, in the late 80s.
You're absolutely right. Fight back. His policy agenda was the original neoliberal program for policy change in Australia, and what John Howard ended up doing in many respects reflected fight back. The thing about the John Hewsons of the world, Andrew, is that, you know, the Liberal Party has an interesting history of, even when its party room is right wing, they tend to draw on for their leaders people like Malcolm Turnbull, John Hewson, who could have gone either way in politics. Now, when John Hewson came back from working in America after he did his PhD, he actually considered, will I join the Labor Party or will I join the Liberal Party? Malcolm Turnbull actually asked people in the Labor Party for Labor Party pre-selection. And because it's so much harder to get pre-selection of the Labor Party, often these kind of centrists do tend to go Liberal because, as a friend of mine says, to get a Liberal Party pre-selection, you've just got to show up. Mm. Now, I know that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's a lot easier to get pre-selection in the Liberal Party. And, of course, the Liberal Party room at the moment is extremely right-wing. They turned to Malcolm Turnbull, who philosophically they were always extremely dubious about. They didn't see him as one of them. And that's because he wasn't one of them. He was a moderate liberal centrist / Labor kind of person. And they used him as a human shield, really, to get them over the line at that last election. And now they've thrown him away.
Yeah, I know people tried to characterise him as a sort of a Labor type person, but boy, he hated unions and he loved tax cuts for the rich. Look, this is that's Turnbull, but this is the point where the Liberals, I think, are snookered in a way, because economic rationalism or neoliberalism, whatever you call it, is increasingly loathed in the marginal seats. Privatisation, tax cuts for the big banks, increasingly loathed in the marginal seats, where there is still, however, residual support for tough border protection. But in those smaller Liberal seats where tax cuts for the wealthy are loved, there is a much... The Liberals are snookered because their social policies are unpopular. So where do they go?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating, the situation you've portrayed. It's going to be even more after the election, because what will happen, what's most likely on current trends, is that the Morrison government will lose and lose badly. There will be an analysis after the election. The thing is, the analysis is going to be done by the MPs who are left in the party room, and they are likely to be the kind of more extreme right-wing liberals that are left. Now, are they really going to honestly come up with an analysis that says, gee, we were too right-wing, maybe we should move to the centre? I don't think so. These people are very inward-looking. If you look at how the Republican Party in the US is operating at the moment, it's entirely inward-looking. And until they become more interested in reconnecting with mainstream Australia, reflecting mainstream Australia in their party room, I think they're in trouble. Scott Morrison is a really interesting case. He's kind of dodged up the signifiers of being the regular Australian bloke. He's got the hat, he's got the prominent affiliation with the Cronulla Sharks rugby league team, he's got the, you know, ridiculous masculinist ScoMo nickname. But, you know, you just can sense quite quickly with him that they're all a series of props to make him look mainstream. And underneath, you've got an extremely conservative, evangelical Christian who is not like mainstream Australia. Mm. And people like their politicians to be a bit like them. He's not.
Mm. Not all evangelical Christians are extremely conservative, but he would certainly identify as a socially conservative religious person. Look, just before we go, Chris, we've only got a minute. Does this then suggest that we are going to see a crossbench of maybe 10, the majority of which may end up being people like Karen Phelps, Cathy McGowan, the member for Mayo, Rebecca Sharkey, smaller Liberals in all but name?
I think that is a serious possibility, and if that's the case, the crossbench is going to be predominantly exile Liberals. And the Liberal Party's got a choice. It can either make a conscious decision to be more inclusive, be more pluralistic as it was in the old days, as Robert Menzies intended when he founded the Liberal Party, or not. And until it makes the decision to return to those Menziesian roots, I think that's going to be its situation, and that's going to make it easier for Labor to form government. So are they interested in winning power sustainably for the long term? Well, if they are, they're going to move to the centre. Mm. Their choice.
Yeah, 20 seconds though. The South Australian Liberal government, for example, does appear more traditionally smaller Liberal.
Well, again, you can appearances and what you actually do in your legislative agenda are two different things. Howard federally was a master of looking like the reasonable man, yet implementing very right-wing policies. So, you know, you've got to look at not just the rhetoric, but the reality. And I think one of the problems for the Liberals is people don't like what's being dished up and they're not going to vote for them in enough numbers to get them across the line one more time.
Good to talk to you. Chris Wallace, she's now at the ANU's National Centre for Biography. Chris, thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Pleasure, Andrew. Thanks.